Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Typical, disgusting display!
Oh, tonight we got them. Goldie, the Sulk, and JC.
Typical, disgusting display!
And it starts right now.
Welcome back to another episode of A Typical Disgusting Display, a podcast for writers by writers who hate writing. We're excited today. We have a return guest coming. One of our first guests, and we're anxious. Lou Schneider is going to be here.
Woo-hoo!
And we're anxious to talk to him about all the success that the podcast has brought him. Yeah, go ahead.
You know how when shows run out of ideas, so they just do kind of a slightly worse version of what they've already done before?
Oh, yeah.
I would just like to hang the banner and shoot off the streamers and bring out the cake with candles to celebrate the fact that we have entered this phase of the podcast.
First joke of the day.
That's right. We're hanging our George W. Bush mission accomplished banner as we welcome Lou Schneider back, and he'll be out here in a few minutes, and we're looking at him now, laughing in his chair. We just saw his repaired knees, which hopefully he won't talk about on air.
Yeah.
But Goldie, actually all three of us, JC as well, we just had a Vegas excursion.
Yes.
We brought back the Family Guy writer's trip to Vegas, which we hadn't done since before the pandemic. So we all went there last week. We went during the week for lower rates.
And the theme was building up the house.
Building up the house,
right?
Instead of taking down the house. Yeah, we built up the house. The house is several thousand stronger after us being there. Although I will say, one of our writers, Matt McElhaney, I sat next to him at the blackjack table after our dinner. And so we were all playing, you know, blackjack. We got a little bonus money as part of the dinner, which was very nice.
Cute.
Of the EPs, and Seth contributed to our gambling fund. So we all hit the tables, and of course I'm getting just creamed as usual. Like, it's always the same emotionless dealer who kind of just buzzsaws you. But Matt McElhaney next to me, who had a couple drinks at dinner, was just stumbling his way into thousands and thousands of dollars. Like,
wow.
He could not stop winning. And in fact, it was so sweet. It was like out of a movie. He kept leaning over to me after he would win these giant hands, like almost in disbelief, like, I've never been this lucky in my life.
Aww.
I've never been this lucky in my whole life.
I mean,
I think he must have walked away with like $5,000.
Is there anything worse than when one of your friends is winning and you have to do this show of excitement as you're losing? Or like when people at your table, like, as part of the social contract of this thing, you're supposed to, when they get blackjack, you're supposed to be like, yes. It's like,
good job.
No, I only care about my money.
Right.
I don't care about everyone else's money.
I don't know. I find it to be a fun table experience when somebody's kicking ass. We had an interesting...
Well, I was next to Viner.
Yeah,
our friend John Viner,
great, who asked to be part of this podcast.
I don't know that he's ever won a hand in his life.
Oh, no.
I don't think so. And it's like a myth that is true.
Yes.
You know, it's like if you actually went to the woods and saw Bigfoot every time.
Yeah.
Because Viner, when he sits down at the table, he predicts he's going to lose, and then he loses, and he gets so hilariously angry and about it.
He doesn't just lose, like, in a normal way.
No.
Like, the dealer shows an 8, and he shows a 3, and he busts. It's like, he gets 20, the dealer has blackjack.
Yeah, yes.
He gets 20, the dealer goes ace. Ace, 19 aces, and then a 2. It's like he loses in the most improbable fashions, in the smallest ways, the most frustrating ways, and he just goes crazy to the point where the pit boss's eyes are on him for like an hour straight. Like, they want to throw him out, but he's losing so much they can't.
Do you remember, by the way, now that we're separated by miraculously 17 years from the first Vegas trip to this one, but do you remember his phrase at the first Vegas trip, and do you remember his phrase from this past weekend?
I mean, the first Vegas trip, it's famous. Everyone knows it's what are the odds.
Yes. So Viner, really? Every time he would lose a hand at the table, he would just, like, almost with angry delight, would just go, what are the odds? Are you telling me that she had a 3 showing and then flipped an 8 and then got a 10? What are the odds? And he, and it was like, it's such a catchphrase for him. But this time he had a different one that he kept repeating, which I found so funny. He just kept saying after every hand, he just kept looking at the dealer and going, stolen, stolen. Stolen.
He also
was so angry about
this, almost like Fox News paranoia that the machine itself that distributes the cards is like a Dominion machine that is rigged. And he was accusing the machine of being rigged, as though, like, it's not enough that just, if you know basic percentages, the odds aren't in your favor. Like, you know, going in, you're supposed to lose. So when you lose, you're not supposed to be surprise. You're
right,
just supposed
right.
to kind of like take it and
take
laugh
it.
And
yeah,
wow.
have fun.
Yeah.
We had, so yeah, Viner was off the rails, and you're right, he was pointing at the machine. What goes on in that shuffler?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure, look, it's under a box. I'm sure everything's totally normal under that shuffling machine. But our table was very funny. We had, it was funny because originally Tom Devaney, there he is, was sitting next to me on my right. And he and I have been at many blackjack tables together where we sort of enjoy the experience of getting buzzsawed, as we call it, just like losing.
Okay.
And we know, and like we always say, like, oh, I want to sit next to you. And so he's getting buzzsawed, and then he leaves the table ostensibly to get more money, but he never returned. And so then it was hilarious that Matt McElhaney sat in that seat, and it became the luckiest seat in the house. And if Tom had just stayed, he would have been getting all those blackjacks and all that. So on my other side is one of our younger, newer writers, Paulina. Paulina Diaz was next to me.
Right.
And she was hilarious because she was shouting the rules at everyone, which somebody does, you know, like when you're supposed to hit, you know, you're supposed to hit on that, like you're supposed to split those. But then she would never abide by any of the rules herself.
She also was like not really correctly
not
applying
all of them
the
correct.
Rules. Like there were times where she's like, you should double on that. And it's like, no.
Not against a 10. You don't double against a 10.
No, you shouldn't.
Yeah. But she was very adamant about the rules.
She was very adamant.
One of the big rules is when you have 16 and the dealer has a 10 showing, you're supposed to hit. For the table, you're supposed to hit.
Okay.
And she was...
Because God forbid the table take a hit instead
know,
of you.
Know.
You
right.
know, like...
But she was dishing...
Oh, the table. I just love the table. I'm so happy for the table.
I've always loved the table.
Oh. And we're
going
to keep in touch after this game, right? So I'm not just wasting my money by, like, laying down on this grenade. I'm definitely going to get it back when we all reunite, right?
Oh, I'm glad you brought up the grenade, because your dad was a World War II hero, and he would have laid on a grenade, but clearly you would not have.
I don't know if there was money involved. His opinion might have changed.
All right. Anyway, Paulina's barking orders at everyone and not abiding by them herself.
We
had Danny Smith was at the table, and he's a very interesting blackjack player because he's a guy in life, if you get Danny Smith talking, he may never stop. Like, he, you know, and it's great. Awesome. It's hilarious. And I love talking with him. And he's got a billion stories. At the blackjack table, he doesn't say a word. He's locked in. He's looking at his cards. Serious. It's almost like he's unaware of the rest of the table, but he's playing by the rules. It's interesting, the personality change.
You know what he looks like? Is he looks like the campaign aide of someone who just lost an election. Like, wow. His tie's undone, his jacket's off. He's got like a beer, his sleeves are rolled up.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, look, we put up a fight, boys, but you know, it's just not our day.
Right. Yeah, too many rural counties. They were our downfall. But it was a very fun trip. And I don't know, Goldie, if you felt it. I certainly felt that, you know, usually on those kinds of like team building, bonding trips, like I don't get anything from them. I don't care. They're just kind of like to be endured in some way. But this one, it felt nicer. I don't know why. I don't know if it has to do with the Family Guy 25th. Anniversary.
No,
or...
no one cares about that.
You changed.
It's COVID. COVID. We don't take it for granted anymore that we can be together. And you gave you and Rich both gave great toasts. And like, I was very impressed as a writer, you know, how you were off the cuff. And I felt a little bad because, and I will apologize to you because I said something afterwards. I repeated one of your lines as a joke.
I didn't hear. I don't remember that.
Oh, good. Never mind. I don't apologize. But you gave such a great toast. And I think there was a real camaraderie on the show. And I also feel like as a staff, we are, you know, probably less adversarial than we've ever been and closer than we've ever been. I think everyone's just a little older. And as the TV landscape has changed and COVID happened, we're just kind of happy to have jobs, happy to be together and not sort of looking for everything that's wrong and pointing like that person got a script and I didn't get a script and they were in the show. It's like no one's doing that anymore. Like no one's belly aching about bullshit anymore.
That's good to hear.
I love
that's
that.
Good to hear. And does that include Mike D?
You know, most of the people.
I'm kidding, Mike D. We
love
you.
Him. Yes.
He came around the table like it was his daughter's wedding and was like shaking hands.
I love that.
Just like he's paying like, his respects here. To people.
Thanks I for know. Being here. Appreciate
Mike,
you being here.
Mike Maitre D.
Maitre D. But anyway, it was a very fun trip.
It was.
I'm glad you guys had a nice trip.
Yeah, I'm glad we all did it. And Goldie, there was something, just one little thing I wanted to highlight from the trip. Let's see, I got to open up my texts here. Because Goldie, we have so many hilarious texts in a week. And of course, the very funniest thing you were texting this week, I cannot repeat,
now,
but it was hilarious.
That's the thing, is both of us sort of have to not get indicted for a crime or a text or something to a court.
Very funny. Okay, so I found it. I found it. This made me kind of chuckle in rereading it. You said, and this is at 10:58 a.m., I get a text from you. You want to eat in maybe a half hour, 45 minutes, 10:58 a.m.
Yeah.
And so I wrote
I've been up a long time.
I wrote, yes, sounds good. And you start to pitch places and you say, there's a place called Black Tap at the Venetian. Want to do that? And this is very you. You wrote, or say literally anything else, which was very funny. Then this is where I started to notice something. I wrote, yeah, that sounds good. I said, you want to meet there at 11:45 or noon? You instantly write back, 11:45. And you wrote, if you are up for it, I can even do 11:30.
But what I'm saying is now.
Now.
I know. And so this is already turning into a very Jewish lunch.
Yes.
Where we're like agitated about getting there at 11:30. Mm-hmm. And so then I wrote down, I'll get down there as close to that as I can. And
then I was regretting ever asking you. I was like, I could now just be eating by myself and be in my room in like 20 minutes.
And then you write back, Black Tap actually looks terrible.
Yes.
Walking to Palazzo Restaurant Row will recommend something better. And then you wrote Sugarcane Raw Bar and Grill. I write back, gross.
you should have taken that one.
You're right. I wrote nothing like Desert Shrimp. And
that was funny. Yeah.
You say, okay, let's go to Bouchon. You found this Bouchon. You said, okay, it's not in Restaurant Row. I'm heading over. And then you wrote, dude, audible to Yardbirds. This place blows, but I can meet you here. And then You just, it
the
was
the menu like, for brunch. Like, literally, all I wanted was a fucking Caesar salad with shrimp on it or chicken or something.
Yeah.
And the menu is like organ meats and like, right. You know, like steak frites and like
sweet
beef bread. Bourguignon. It's like, it's $10.50.
I know. Yeah. Well, that's your fault.
Yeah. It's like, I don't want to eat like a whole branzino or, you know, like, you know, turkey five ways or whatever the fuck they're doing. It's like, have some eggs and have a salad. I don't know. So, yeah, that was a debacle.
Well, so we ended up going to Yardbirds, which was fine. Good, yeah. Tasty, totally sure. Like a sort of a barbecue place. You got your salad. I had some wings.
Ooh.
And then we eat our whole lunch. And we're walking out of lunch back to our hotel, and we run into Mike D in the lobby, and he is just going to lunch to meet someone where we were. So I just thought it was funny.
Where did you guys stay?
The Venetian.
Well, we stayed at the Palazzo.
Oh. Yes. So we told everyone the Venetian, which is where you have to go to check in, and then you have to walk about 2.35 miles to get to the Palazzo.
The funniest thing I saw in Vegas in our time there is because I like to walk the whole strip very quickly and only play Willy Wonka slot machines. I have a very weird approach to Vegas. So I'm scouring. I'm trying to get hot on these machines. In the middle of the strip, it's a little bit toward the south end, they are building a giant Marshalls. Like, who the fuck is like, dude, we're doing it. You, me, Vegas, bringing down the house. We won. We did it. We hit splurge at fucking Marshalls
now. Yeah, now we got
going to Marshalls, honey. Get whatever you want.
We got slacks money now. We got slacks money from Marshalls.
All the Ralph Lauren chaps you can wear.
I wonder
the brands of chocolates by the register you've never heard of.
Right.
The fitness equipment that's been marked down 9 times. Get it all.
Do you think that they put it there thinking, oh, I bet drunk people will shop here ironically? Or do you think that
they're like, okay, for all the people who committed a murder and ruined their clothes and just need new shirts. I don't know.
Oh, God. Yeah. Well,
it was fun. It was the perfect amount of Vegas. It was.
And
like,
JC, yeah. tell us a little bit about your Vegas weekend. Oh. You were there with Stu, and he was performing with Danny Elfman.
Yes, yeah. For the Sick New World Festival. And they played in front of 65,000 people.
Woo.
It was incredible. We also saw A Perfect Circle, which was an amazing set. And we saw Primus. So two bands, Primus and A Perfect Circle, their gear did not make it to the festival. So they were all playing on like rented gear with none of their preset sounds. And it's a testament to how amazing these musicians actually are to be able to pull off stuff like this. But it was Josh Fries on drums for A Perfect Circle is just an experience for that people should really, really try to see.
I mean, there's nothing better when you're hungover than listening to Primus.
I know. Put me in a 90-degree desert hungover.
It was an amazing
crank
set.
The Primus on some rented amps.
It was so good.
I know. I could not even tell you.
You know,
what,
someone
what
went
Primus
to the
is.
Hospital.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, I saw
for those Fenway, reasons.
Like our Fenway trip. Somebody was carried out in the same way.
Oh, God.
That guy you think of every week.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable.
All right, something else we think of every week that we're not excited about Johnny Jokes.
Whoa, from Hollywood, we've got three of them here. Johnny's on Rented Gear.
On Rented Gear. All right. Well, as I mentioned earlier, we have the legendary Lou Schneider, one of our original guests, who is back, and he is brave enough. He is a real writer and brave enough to do Johnny Carson jokes, and he's smart enough to go first. Lou, Johnny, take it away.
Thank you. I don't know if you've been paying attention. The Trump hush money trial is moving slower than expected, and this is due to a key witness, American Media Incorporated President David Pecker. Court reporters are struggling to keep track of which Pecker is which, and are finding it hard to hear over all the giggling. To be clear, it's the hearing that is hard. A lot of stops and starts in that one, but we're off and running. Okay. Good news from across the pond. King Charles has been cleared to return to public duties. He will not be going full tilt just yet, but rather easing into things. Just some half smiles, some semi waves, and being only half out of touch.
Adam.
I'm on my way here. I can see I'm racing for the barn. While the theories of
the
dark
barn
matter
is racing away from you. Has legs.
While the theories of dark matter and dark energy have been commonly accepted since the 1990s, it seems scientists actually know very little about those entities because, as with most science, this subject is boring, and they didn't bother to study because it wasn't supposed to be on the final. More from the world of science, but different scientists in this case. Certain other scientists are hard at work trying to eradicate an area of waste in the ocean that is the size of Texas. Ooh. Once they figure that out, they can begin to work on the Texas-sized area of waste that is Texas.
Yeah, yeehaw.
Yeehaw.
And now I think I'd like to close with a Norman.
Ooh,
yes.
Commencements. Graduations at a number of universities have been canceled in the wake of protests over the situation in Gaza. I know that's heartbreaking. Many grads, on the other hand, are breathing a sigh of relief because now these kids of divorce don't have to watch their moms deal with that whore their dad was planning to bring to graduation.
Norm whore joke. Always welcome.
Great job, Johnny One.
All right,
take
it
away. Johnny Two, here I am.
Plenty of laughs left. Grab them, boys.
No, it's left some on the table. Here we go.
Yes.
Shocking news from the world of sports as Patriots owner Bob Kraft has had a stroke.
Aww.
Yeah. His health is fine. He just went down to Miami for the weekend. Everyone remember that story?
Is that true? He had a stroke or no?
No, okay, he had a stroke like a hand job.
Yeah, totally.
So I just put it in there.
But you're just inventing like health crises now.
Yeah. Yes, I am, Goldie. It's called a joke. It's not real. It doesn't have to hold up in court. All right, here we go. A new barbershop in Denver is staffed entirely with formerly incarcerated workers. Despite the checkered past of the employees, patrons say it's a great place to go for a shiv and a haircut. Shiv and a haircut.
Is there even a new real barbershop?
There is. That one is real.
Okay.
And here's another real story. Steven Spielberg is advising President Biden on his campaign. This is true. And while staffers say he's come up with some good ideas, they feel the slogan Jurassic Joe may send the wrong message. Jurassic Joe.
Now, is that real?
Yes. Stop asking if it's real. Look what's infected. Goldie, you see what you've done?
You're
infected. Closing with this one. Another real story. Keep it down, everybody. Okay, finally. Oscar Pistorius. Remember him? Oscar Pistorius?
Yes.
Actually like this joke, so I'm excited to tell it. I'm sure it'll play. Oscar Pistorius has been released from prison after serving years for the fatal shooting of his girlfriend. Pistorius thanked all of his supporters, adding that while in prison, He never lost hope that one day he would clack out of there a free man. Johnny Three.
That's very good. Well, pro-Hamas college occupations have swept the country. Students are living in tents, fighting with police, and eating food donated by strangers. Hey, at least they're learning the skills they need to survive when they graduate. The students are on strike until universities divest from Israel, but they promise once their demands are met, they'll get back to skipping class for no reason.
Wait, now, is that a real story?
Yeah, this is happening.
I'm kidding.
On a lighter note, earlier this week, a 2.9 magnitude earthquake shook New Jersey. Fortunately, every Italian under 50 was already safely sheltering with their parents. Sylvester Stallone is writing his memoirs. He's already asked the publisher, how many U's are in And finally, there's a new documentary about Kevin Spacey and all the sexual crimes he's allegedly committed. It's streaming on Seacock.
Woo!
Yes. All right.
That was Seacock.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Lou Schneider. Yes. Lou Schneider, again, one of our first guests, longtime Hollywood writer, director, producer, man of many talents. Of course, I always think of Raymond, because that was absolutely one of the best sitcoms of all time. I think it doesn't get talked about enough in that conversation, in terms of, like, people always talk about, oh, is it Seinfeld? Is it Cheers? Is it Curb? I feel like Raymond belongs in that conversation.
Right after those shows.
But I would say it's a top five all-time sitcom in terms of, like, how much that show makes me laugh. We talked about it last time, I believe, the laugh holds on that show. Which the laugh holds, for those of you who don't know what that means, it's pretty self-explanatory. It's like in a sitcom, when the studio audience laughs, you know, usually it's a polite burst and it kind of fades out. On Raymond, the laughs would probably take a, you know, a 16-minute show and make it 22 minutes just from the laugh. So,
wow.
Lou, welcome back. Thank you for being here again. We miss you. We love you.
It is a thrill.
Yeah, we love having you. But let's jump right into Raymond again. Like, what do you remember?
Let's talk about that. I can contextualize this a little bit.
Yeah.
You are at the stage in your podcast, Goldie. You hit it on the head. I was going to mention this. Where, let's be honest, you've been over some ground now, and now it's time, as we do on every successful sitcom, where you get into, told that story. What do we do now? How about we flip it? So you go from, well, Ray doesn't want to be the coach of the Little League team. What if Ray does want to be the coach? So if we really want to flip this, guys, let me interview you. Okay, so Family Guy.
Yes. Go ahead. I love it. I love the theory behind it. I love the theory behind it.
It's very fun until you actually have to do it.
Of course. Yeah. But it's true. On Raymond and the Goldbergs to some degree, you think at some point, like right around 100 shows, you're like, geez, we've really done a lot of them. And then you just go, it takes a moment. You have to break, you know, through the scar tissue for a second, but then you go, you know what? Let's just do the exact opposite story. Let's do it. And you do all the shows again from the other side.
Especially if you've already, you know, been on the air, say, 5 years or something. The original conception of it took place 5 years ago. And you go, what percentage of the audience with whatever's going on in their lives and, you know, kids, marriages, is going to remember, like, but didn't they, you know, back in 2017, didn't he not want to be the coach?
And, you know, some shows do get very free and easy where, like, literally from the first act to the second act, it's like, so you just did this to have a good joke in the second act to get out of a scene, even though it completely cannibalizes the attitude you had established. I hate that.
A bad show.
And yes, bad shows do it. And luckily, there are none of those. So,
well, now, how did the great showrunner Phil Rosenthal, who ran Raymond and co-created, how did he feel about the flip? Like, was it like something that you felt like you had to sneak past him, or was he on board for like, let's do it?
Or was he so preoccupied with food at that moment?
I was just going to say, none of that ever mattered. It was all about getting his mug out onto Netflix and jamming croissants into his face for the rest of his life.
You know,
and being amazed by them.
Yeah. Well, listen, we understand that Phil is a fan of this podcast.
Yes. So by the way, he is great. I think so. He's great storyteller.
I know.
And the truth is, he and Ray kept us pretty honest. We didn't do it very often. It wasn't really a flip on the Raymond. What we did do occasionally was get too close, where you start slicing the onion real thin, where it would be like, what if Robert is mad at Ray for being too self-centered? Right. And someone goes, well, he's not really self-centered in this one. He's self-absorbed.
There you go.
And it's like that old Woody Allen joke where in Love and Death, where he says, "So are you afraid of death?" And the guy says, "Not so much afraid as frightened." And Woody goes, interesting distinction.
by the way, I'm glad that you mentioned Love and Death. I feel like that's a Woody Allen movie that sort of gets forgotten when you talk about, you know, Manhattan and Annie Hall and Hannah and her sisters. Love and Death.
Once you start sleeping with your own kids.
All right, stop it.
Your work gets a little bit, it goes on a back burner.
Your own kid. I don't, that's not accurate. It's not even accurate.
And also, Goldie, they were just seeing each other at that point. They hadn't started in physically.
I don't want to get into. I want to get into what an absolute machine gun of jokes Love and Death was.
Like, okay,
it's maybe his highest joke volume per minute.
What, my brother and I consistently always says, like, "What about my sister Sonia? Sonia, she married for money." And he goes, "Ugh, money. Well, money."
Yeah, I know. I love that. That's a great joke. Ugh, money. Well, money. Yeah. And there was that whole run when they're trying to, when they're just, they've declared war on Napoleon and Woody is just the coward of the county. And they're all trying to convince him to, you know, my brother has a yellow stripe running down his back. He goes, no, it runs across. He's like, my mother would never let me go off to war. And the mother says, I hope they send him to the front lines. And he goes, my mother, everyone. Thank you.
Mother, folks. What do we win, private? What do we win?
So great. So great.
So many.
Yeah, then
so
it turns many. Into, you know, Martin and Lewis and Jumping Jacks when he gets his whole thing in the army. Yeah.
Yeah. It's terrible.
Very funny. All right, well, so Lou, you know, we've talked about, we all have a Boston connection. You grew up in Brookline, mm-hmm. which is the Jewish hub of Boston. So I'm sure that our families must have crossed paths at China Sales.
Well, one of Dave those Wong's, at Dave Wong's China
yeah,
Sales.
Yeah,
on
Dave
Route
Wong's
9.
China Sales or Pot of Hams. So we go into Pot of Hams this weekend. Yeah. It was just a great place to grow up, especially as a Jewish boy. Brookline was like heaven for Jewish.
Well, the Jews were ghettoed in two areas. They were in South Brookline, the Nouveau Riche, the Goodbye Columbus, you know, salad dressing on the table, in the bottle, on the plate.
Right.
And then there was like sort of the more like intellectual, like the Sons of the Doctors, and they were over like near Devotion and Lawrence School. They were sort of closer to Boston than the Longwood Medical District. So the Jews were on two sides of town, and then the real people were in the middle.
The real people. We don't need that kind of rhetoric in this day and age with what's going on at these campuses, according to Goldie. So that was a great place to grow up. But I saw in reading about you, and is this true? Because sometimes the internet lies to me. Were you born in Chapel Hill, North Carolina?
I was. And I lived there till I was 7. When I got to Brookline, I used to say Reckon.
Oh, wow. True.
I had a Southern accent. My mom's a Southern Jew. She grew up in Jacksonville, Florida. But my parents had moved to Chapel Hill because my dad was on the faculty at UNC.
A Southern Jew, great Neil Young song, by the way.
What was he teaching? Yeah.
My mother was the Head Start coordinator down there, and she, pretty socially conscious. She had me integrate a pool down there when I was like 5.
5?
She was like, nope. There are two pools, because I remember there was a sign in the AMP. It wasn't adhered to, but it was a colored water fountain sign. They hadn't bothered to take it down.
Slipped their mind.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. This is 1967. And my mother said, this is outrageous. There are two pools in this town, and we're going to go to the other pool. I'm like, okay. Didn't know anything about it. Didn't know what it was. There was just a pool. I want to swim.
Yeah.
Go to this pool. And it was a nicer pool than the white pool because it was newer.
Right.
Nice.
But I was the only chip in the cookie on that experience. I was the white chocolate chip. And they had my mother, for some reason, decided, I think I can figure out the reason now, for some reason wasn't swimming that day. Mm-hmm. And so she watched me from outside a fence and said, go in. Go. And I went in. I had to take that silkwood shower.
My mother, everyone.
My mother. My mother. My mother, folks. And they had a high dive that they didn't have at the white pool. And she said, you'll have fun. Go on the high dive. And of course, I'm a chicken. I go up there and now I lose nerve. And now I have to go down.
I've done that.
Oh.
Humiliating.
And all the kids had to look at me. And they weren't racist about it. No one said a word. It was just, I was a poor, frightened white boy going down this terrible stair. My mother's just going, have fun. Like, Kevin, we made our point. We've made the point. Can we go?
Can we go to the white pool, please?
Please.
With the lower diving board.
And I mean, we don't even have a day for you. This is insane.
I know. That's part of what we're doing today is we're going to try to set up Schneider Day.
Yay.
So you move up to Brookline.
Schneider Day is when all white people demand to go into black-owned pools.
Yeah. Ruining it for everybody. We're going to play our bad music. Music and ruin it for everybody.
Yeah. Schneider Day. Do things in a Schneider way.
This is so impossible
most
for
puzzled
me.
Messaging.
I stopped this show to write down notes. Like I'm still back on like you guys hating the way certain songs are phrased. And I'm like screaming, yes, the Cars for Kids commercial. Donate your cars today. That's wrong.
Donate your cars today.
I love this idea that you pause and take notes. So can you tell us a little bit about that? Like, do you remember any of the things that you took notes about that you were interested in?
Look, he's pulling out his phone.
One of the things, and I can't, well, first of all, I was going to hold to a whole thing. I've changed agents since the strike. Because I'm working on my one-man show about Hank Ketchum, who wrote Dennis the Menace.
The Tom Gamble reference.
And we're going to do,
Living room where you can perform.
I had to cram. Goldie had to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning to listen to last week's show. And I'm listening and I'm doing Tom Gamble. I'm going to do Household Hurricane, a dramatic reading from Dennis the Menace, Household Hurricane. also, Alex, your sister went to Noble and Greeno?
Yeah. Correct.
No Balls and Greeno.
Oh, you son of a bitch. How dare you?
I ought to.
Also, Disney, Goldie, I want to reference your Disney experience.
Okay.
I went to Disney. One of the early times with my kids, and I'm waiting to get on the Dumbo Flying Elephants, and there's a guy tattooed with full Nazi tattoos.
Yep. Sure.
And this poor bastard, just like me, he's hating it. I'm hating it. And I'm thinking, what does this fucking guy do? After this, his kids are going to beg to go on It's a Small World. Does he even go? or does he go? And then like all through certain countries, like, shut up. Shut up. Shut up. No, no, no. And then they get to Germany and Copenhagen. Yes!
Yeah! Yes, totally.
This is us.
Maybe, and then maybe he, you know, they pass some of the African countries and it's Schneider Day and he just jumps in the water.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
I was going to suggest that maybe they have like, now in It's a Small World, they have like a section that's like a border crossing where they just are people crossing the river in front of you as you come up. Like, that could be a new, maybe that would get him hooked a little more. Right. Say, exactly, fucking Biden, exactly.
Thanks, Biden.
Thanks, Sleepy Joe. Well, we love that you, first of all, that you listen at all is awesome.
Yes,
we love
it,
and we love that you take notes.
I know.
You know, it's like, that's,
it's like
great. That's
journal.
Our dream listener. It's like, yeah, they're listening to the, he's Googling the Crystal Light aerobics.
Right.
He's watching that.
It's me. It's the two guys in Yemen. I've done some research.
Yes.
And one of those guys who's now in Copenhagen, clearly.
Yeah. So.
He opened a Yemeni coffee shop in Copenhagen.
Right,
he's hoping for the best. all right. So like, tell us about, because now it's been 2 years since you've been on here. Like what kind of
stuff?
Yeah,
the Goldbergs is.
Well, the Goldbergs, you know, I used to have a different approach to show business. Goldie, I think you're probably where I am now. Goldie, let me finish.
I love that runner.
No, I think you're probably, like, when I started this, and Goldie, I, by the way, I do reference you all the time because when people say, can you talk to this class or can you do, you know, can you explain, you know, my kid wants to get in the show business.
No,
my cousin,
no, I can't.
No. And your analogy is perfect because it's like asking someone to come, saying, I'm coming to California in 1851. I can't wait to hit the gold strike. And it's like, yeah. No, there's no gold. And what you said about the pickaxe, I'll sell you a pickaxe. I will sharpen your pickaxe. You will not find gold. You know, I hate to retread your stuff, but it's exactly right because there would have been a time if I got on a show like the Goldbergs where I would have done 6 or 7 years, said everything I wanted to say creatively, and then I would have taken a deal somewhere and gone and failed. But at that point in my career, I was getting a second long slurp at the trough. And I loved being on that show till the end. I was directing so many. But
that's so cool.
Just in terms of like they had cut the budget. What new stories were we telling in you know, like the big money was gone. We couldn't go outside. Like, it was really hard. Two of our cast members were gone, like by season 10.
Yeah.
It was like, so, but you if you're getting a paycheck in this day and age,
yeah,
you stay. That's my advice.
Well,
to you.
I did want
to
ask because you've
for real,
you know, had this incredible career and you've been doing this long enough. Like, do you think this is a cycle or do you think this is a permanent sort of change for the worse? Like, have you lived through something comparable where you thought, like, okay, it's really bad, and then all of a sudden there was a boom?
No, I've never lived through anything comparable to this, and that's because of the proliferation of screens and screen time. You have a movie camera in your pocket now,
right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I don't. And you always say it too. It's like you can watch so many interesting things. Like, do you have the sort of wherewithal? It's worth it. Like, there's great TV now. You gotta. And it's not even hard to find. You just have to commit to sitting down in one place for a while. And
yeah,
it's hard. Like, my kid wants to do this and he's really good, but he's going to have to do 4 or 5 shows a year or something like that, or write screenplays, or he's working on podcasts. And, you know, that's great money, but
you know, don't we know it?
Well, don't you think also, like, I always think about how it's not just the screen in your pocket, which of course that's a huge thing, and the fact that this thing is mathematically feeding you, it's creating an addiction with it. It's an addiction machine. Like, that's
absolutely
its purpose, is to get you addicted to it, to watch it, to keep monetizing you somehow. Okay, we know. Ooh, that there's documentaries.
Monetize. There it is again. Monetize.
Okay.
He said it before. He reads things. He doesn't work
That's
on
right.
the pronunciation. He
That's right. I don't work on my pronunciation.
He calls it monetize because every time he gets money, he goes, oh.
Money. But the second thing is that the screen that turns toward you, the camera that turns toward you, right? That I remember growing up, if you took a picture of yourself, people would just be looking at you like, yes, what an asshole. Like, what is this megalomaniac doing, taking a camera out and taking a picture? And now it's like expected more that you are going to capture yourself and show everyone as that opposed to taking pictures of them for your enjoyment. And it's like you're now the center of it. Which I feel like doesn't really get talked about and also is such an old man thing to say, I feel like, at this point.
Here I am.
A profound thing that you're not supposed to watch what other people are doing. You're supposed to show everyone what you're doing in this ongoing competition for who can get the most thumbs up. That we never really agreed was happening, but now we're all suddenly wearing a bib and we're in a race. I don't know.
And with that... entertainment was over. Thank you for tuning in, everybody.
Good night and good luck.
I'm talking to two guys who are on a long runner. I've been on two giant ones. Like these opportunities, I don't know if they're going to do 200 episodes.
Well, when we talked earlier about the appreciation of the Family Guy trip, I think this is a more eloquent explanation of, like, I think what we were expressing was that the rarity of this is appreciated.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And Lou, so because you talk about you've never seen the like, you know, of what's happening now. And I would agree with that. Probably it's a new phenomenon we're going through now with this streaming and how everything is six episodes at a time. So you can't really support yourself getting on a show for a year. Right. But can you compare it to, because I know your career started in the very late 80s, early 90s.
Right.
And that was a time when cable was exploding, where we went from the 3/4 networks to, you know, 50. And do you see any similarities to what's happening now in that moment? Do they feel different? Do they feel in some ways similar? I mean, were people saying these same things back then?
I was young and I was sort of just, you know, putting one foot in front of the other. My first job was in cable. I was a Nickelodeon game show host on an incomprehensible show. But anyway, I guess people thought, well, no one's going to be able to. They did say, like, oh, with so many things on. There was even a song. What was it? A Springsteen.
Yeah, Bruce
song?
Springsteen. Yeah,
seven channels.
Channels and nothing's on or whatever. And there was that feeling of, and you know what? He was right, because now there's a million channels. And, you know, TV's like homework now. If someone says, you have to watch, it's like, no, I can't.
Yeah,
I
just can't. Tell me what to watch.
Yes, just tell me, like, you know, if it's not a documentary, I'm sort of not interested. I mean, usually, but it's like, it's really hard. And so I think we went through that. I mean, look, Abbott broke through, but it used to be more than one show would break through. Like, now it's like,
I mean, it's, I find myself hoping that someone will program an AI Robert Durst. So that then we can keep making The Jinx, which is my favorite show.
No. I keep thinking Fred Durst when you say Robert Durst.
No, Robert Durst.
Like,
happens,
why?
That
when
happens
they,
a lot.
When he calls you from prison, it's like, you are receiving a call from...
That's what he does. He caws like a creature. Bob.
He's out there holding on to the precious.
I'm taking that call every time.
I haven't watched my wife said, we gotta watch that. We'd already watched the first one. Okay. Well, yeah. I'll watch anything.
Yeah, no, that's
fun. Great.
That's still very fun. although, you know, I don't want to be a spoiler alert, but I think we all know the ending at this point. speaking of that, like, because you mentioned earlier that it's this interesting dynamic where everything is kind of watered down for us as writers. It's a lot more difficult to make a living. And yet you said this, and I agree with it. There are a lot of really great things on now. Like, there's some great television. And television, I feel like, kind of like acting, like it can't help but get better as things get more realistic and you can talk about more things in shows. Like, I don't know if any of you have watched Baby Reindeer yet.
Oh, that looks great. I haven't watched it yet.
It looks
so interesting.
It's phenomenal. It's phenomenal. It's exactly what we're talking about here. It's something that never would have been made at any time in the past. It's dealing with
all kinds of new issues that never get talked about. And it's so fucking interesting and great. And it's a true story. So like, there are things like that. Like the Ripley remake I thought was amazing.
People say that's great. Fargo was great this year.
Fargo is awesome. Show. Yeah.
Well,
Fargo is...
listen, we waited this long to see Naked John Hamm, and I feel like he totally botched that because it's like, it's too late, man. You should have shown your ass 15 years ago when we wanted to see it, because then what you revealed was, I would say arguably, if you put my ass on camera next to John Hamm's ass, 70% of people are picking my ass. And I'm not even kidding or exaggerating.
You can get his ass double.
Goldie, this is so on brand for you. Yeah. The guy who thinks his ass holds up next to John Hamm is the same guy
up.
Who thinks... Nope,
it's better.
Shut up,
Dunning-Kruger.
Don't judge the ass. Is a totally different field of play, my friend.
Goldie, this is the same guy.
A face competition.
No. This is the same guy who thinks he can run out of his house, toe the line, and beat Usain Bolt in the 50.
I do not think that. But I will say,
if
anyone can make this happen, you want to put my naked ass next to John Hamm's naked ass.
Side by side.
Yeah, I mean, I think we could do that.
Morty can get John Hamm.
You're rep
can,
now, right?
No, Morty can be Goldie's ass agent. So we can do that. Yes.
I just represented from the waist down. Goldie, let me finish.
Wait, you want it up against John Hamm? Oh boy!
I didn't think Fargo was good.
It was good.
It was good.
I think the gentleman. I want to say that show. Excellent.
I don't even know what that is.
That's a show on Netflix. It's done by Guy Ritchie. And I know Goldie loves to, when somebody's name is Guy, there's a Goldie joke there always. Is his wife Gal Ritchie? It's excellent. Every episode is like a James Bond film. You should watch it.
To that end, while we're doing the Guy Gal thing, I like to empty the, you know, remember I've got drawers of jokes here I got to dump on you guys.
Good.
I've always wanted to do the, like, when people have the crazy names, what do they do for the wedding announcements? Like, Mr. and Mrs. Seymour 3000 cordially invite you to the wedding of their son, Andre.
That's good. I didn't know where you were going with that. That was really funny. Speaking of Seymour, did you see, this happened maybe like a month ago when it was opening day, the Mets, the New York Mets, hosted a World War II veteran, you know, like, we're proud to have you know, in this stadium this time.
Uh-oh.
His name, Seymour Wiener.
No. Yes. Oh. Literally Seymour Butts.
And like, of course, the internet went crazy with that.
Of course.
And then to this guy's credit, who's like 100, obviously, he's a World War II vet. This guy made a statement. He's like, I've seen all the jokes about my name and I love it.
God bless
Seymour Wiener.
Can I just say that as we, you know, we writers are trying to be good. There's still nothing funnier to me than I think the pinnacle was Milk, Milk, Lemonade.
Yes.
Wait.
Around the corner, fudge is made.
When you're a kid, when that comes onto into your consciousness at age 9, I'm like, I can't be a writer. These are writers.
I didn't like it. I remember not liking it.
What'd you have, Goldie?
I didn't like it. I just didn't like it.
Who is this? Give us.
Too crude. What's up, Disney?
Where does that come from? Oh, milk, milk, lemonade.
Yeah, it's a kid thing. You point at one tit, other tit, then your dick. Milk, milk, lemonade. Around the corner, fudge is made.
Well, I understand. I just, the fact that Goldie's like, I didn't like it. I thought maybe it came from a bit.
I bet Goldie would have done in that era. You would have just gone up, instead of doing that, you would have just gone tit, tit, dick, asshole.
Yeah. There you go.
Which is like, it was the childish way of getting to talk about all those things.
A chance whenever the word art comes up to say the word fart is like, what luck?
Still good. Fart history 101.
Come on.
I'm a fart history major.
With you.
Yeah, there you go.
Goldie loves
Goldie loves a good wordplay, as we know. As much as he pretends he does
not. Hey, Alec, I now can't remember. You know how you were making up all your dumb stories for Johnny Jokes because they weren't real.
Robert Kraft thing. Yes.
What was the original one? It was like Wilt Chamberlain. Like, it was a Bob Cousy.
It was
this was a Johnny joke.
She koozied his. I can't remember that one.
But it was evidently Bob Cousy has admitted to having a number of affairs.
It was a 60s call girl who had written an autobiography about her time, like hooking up with members of the. She koozied his. I forget.
Oh, yes.
It was something like that. Yeah. Yeah, that was fun.
Her koozie, right?
Like, yeah. Bobbed her koozie, or yeah, something like that.
Something.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah, and that goes off of who was is it Dana Gould who does the funny bit about Carson? If he were alive today, would say like, he Googled her tweets.
Right.
You know, he Yahooed.
That's you. That's your joke.
No. But he does something like he Yahooed himself. That's what it is. Like, we both had little variations on that. Yeah. So I know I'm partly in there, but yeah. Dana Gould.
JC, you're going to have to get the scissors out on this one, baby. There's
no
a lot
way.
Of,
no,
a lot
no.
of chaff.
We leave it all in.
Listen.
And then some.
We could change the title of this podcast to Just the Chaff.
Just the chaff.
Get ready, Copenhagen. This is coming your way.
All right, here we come, Yemen. It's a little chaff for your wheat.
Well, what have you been doing since the Goldbergs? Like, what has your approach been to, you know, your career? Seriously, because this is of curiosity to me, and I think like people involved with this is you come off something successful. You directed a ton of these, like 100 at least.
No, like 50. I did like 50 of them.
Oh, never
That's
mind.
A lot.
And then what? You spend most of the day going to the union pension websites and seeing like what and running projections of how much you'll make
if I
at
quit
different
today.
Ages. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. You do that's like 2 or 3 hours every morning. Yeah. Then first of all, the strike was fantastic because that was just like the goodbye tour. I got to hanging out. I walked with Danny Smith.
Like, nice.
I got to see people that I'd hadn't hung out with in years, old comics and stuff. So that was great. And then it got real right around, you know, when the strike ended and we had to start pretending to look for work. And I just declared victory. And it's really almost like that. Like, I want to do, you know, when someone says, oh, I'm doing this thing and it might be 8 episodes. And I kind of say, could it be 6 episodes? You know, like, I want to work, but only with the people who I've worked with, who I really like, or who would maybe be there in a room working for someone that they like, and they can vouch for him, because it's too, like, you know, at this point in my career, it's life's too short, and there are so many great people that I work with. It'd be fun to work with again, but it really comes down to, hey, you know what? Why don't we just eat?
Jewish. Somebody feed Lou.
So I'm helping 2 young writers do this thing, but I don't know that we'll ever. Like, I wouldn't run it. I would try to hand it off to someone. But it's a good. You know, I hate reading things, and they're
Me
always
too.
Terrible.
Me too.
And then every once in a while, you go, "Oh shit, this is good."
Right. Now I have to do something with it.
Right. Usually someone gives you something and you go, I don't even know where to start. I mean, you say the regular things.
No, you say
good, but
it was great.
Yeah.
Really funny story. Great characters. Great world. I think you're onto something here. You know, good luck with it. I wish I knew more. I wish I could say something to help you, but I can't.
Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. Because the other thing you would say would be, if I was really going to deal with this, we'd be starting again.
Yeah.
I would say you should take
your fucking laptop and you should throw it in the ocean. And if it comes back to shore, you should kick it out until the current changes. And you should not even allow yourself to type.
Cut
you should just be someone
off.
Who enjoys watching stuff.
The warm, supportive embrace of Goldie.
Because usually you do read something And almost always it's true. It might be true to them and stuff, but you just don't spark to it. So right. Then the question, this one I got one and I was like, oh shit, I do know where to start. Like, ooh. I know where to start on this. Yeah. I have a very concrete note to give them and it was good. And like, I guess when things sort of open up again a little, cause right now it's bad. Mm-hmm. I'll try to pitch this with them, but
that's cool.
I'm wondering if, because you did something very smart, which is you diversified your career by becoming a director as well. So how does that enter into your plans going forward? Is it something where like you're looking to write, or are you looking for an opportunity?
I would love to direct. And some of that is the camp counselor in me, because that's most of the job.
Camp Naomi.
Stop it.
That's a girl's
camp. I know,
name,
stop it. Okay. It was a girls' camp that the boys' camp moved to the girls' camp and we never changed the name. Mm-hmm. And we used to get our asses kicked by these boys' camps in sports when we would go to their camp.
Yeah,
and then they'd come to our camp and our girls would come back from swimming and the wheels would come off all of those teams.
Oh, you had a home court advantage in
we
that
had a
way.
Home court advantage.
That's awesome.
That's great.
That's awesome. But so to get back to the question, is it writing in particular, or is it just excites you?
It's anything. It's writing. It's writing. It's directing. I mean, the good thing about directing the Goldbergs is I started in the second season and I still had time to sort of imprint, you know, work with that cast to the point that, and also I got trust from the people upstairs. They said, put any joke you want in it, you know, like just shoot it. I mean, I'm not going to call for a new set or change lighting, but if I have something, I can put it in and I'd love to do that. And I'd also like to work with sort of new casts. So, because I think you build that sort of community and that task-oriented group in a way that really, like, these are things that not every director does, I think. Yeah,
right.
I don't know. Some do. And you want an old white guy, really.
Well, I think it's such an advantage to be included in on the writing and to, you know, like when you perform a role at a table read, I found like, people are always surprised when it's like, oh, you're not even like really an actor, but you can do the table read okay. And it's like, yeah, I know where the jokes are. I was there when they were created. And I think sometimes as you're directing too, like you're watching someone else direct sometimes and you're losing your mind because you're like,
no, they're not getting anywhere near the
joke.
They
don't know where the joke is. Yeah.
You know, and the actors are, you know, enunciating the wrong words, and you're not supposed to give them line readings technically, because for some reason it was decided very early on it's offensive to give someone the answer.
right.
Even though you know it and could save everyone huge amounts of time and labor and agony, but you're not allowed to. But I think that, you know, I'm sure you bring all that to the set, the knowledge of like where the jokes are, which is pretty valuable.
I want to take one moment to say what had me reach out very directly to you guys last time was I was trying not to watch a couple have sex on a plane. So I sent an email because I had to distract myself with something. And what I distracted myself with was the first three episodes of Ted, which were fantastic. Like you talk about like, oh my God, here's something I can't even find, as you guys like to say. It's over there on the cock. It's sitting right there on the top of the cock. And there's Goldie, unbelievably great as the so the joke's on you, Mr. Character. Yeah. And he's great. And I'm like, this is fucking, what a great show, because it has everything I like. It's filthy dirty, it's terribly impolite. And then it also means something to these people. Like it's so like
it's
the
so
characters
good.
Really do love each other, and you have to like it's an amazing. I thought it was fantastic. So it sort of gave me hope, Alec, like in that way. Like you say, well, how do you feel about going forward? Well, it's all going to suck until you get a great show, and then it's great.
And then, like you said, we're doing eight more.
We're a solid eight.
And that'll be it.
Flipping it. This season, Ted doesn't want to smoke pot.
Yeah, but he's against it. You know how I know there's certain great things out there? Because sometimes I watch a show and I go, oh, I'd love to direct one. And then there's some where you go, I want no part of this. And then there's some you go, that's good for someone else. Like, when I used to watch Breaking Bad, I was like, well, that's writing. I'm not that. Those guys are real writers. They can write. I can't do that.
Drama.
But boy, you know, so it's the rule of everything. 2% is great. 2% absolutely blows. And the rest falls in some vast wasteland in the middle. But some of it's pretty good.
Yep. Well, I wanted to go back to something that you threw into a story when you're talking about the strike, your farewell tour, which is hilarious, that you picketed with Danny Smith. So I'm curious about, between the two of you, who didn't get a word in edgewise?
They stopped the conversation on cuts.
they waved it off.
Yeah, they just,
they're,
yeah.
They're we, taking we, a close we, look at both conversers, yeah. And they're waving it off.
Yeah, it was brutal. We actually ended up finding attacking civilians. We actually I ended up talking to Jonathan Groff, and he ended up talking to somebody. He was like, I'll meet back up with you, Danny. And it was
Groff doesn't want that smoke. He couldn't handle you. Are you kidding me?
Speaking of that, I've not told this story on the podcast, I don't think, it involves Phil Rosenthal, so I thought it might interest you. But this is sort of a perfect encapsulation of show business. So when I was working on Dads and it seemed like I had a little bit of heat, I get this call from Phil Rosenthal, and it's Phil Rosenthal and Rob Lazebnik, who's a very funny Simpsons writer. They want to meet you and take you out to breakfast, and they have an idea for you. And I was like, oh, this is amazing. And so I go and I meet Phil, who's incredibly nice, and Rob, who's very cool. And
so nice.
They start saying we have a show at Amazon. It's an animated show. And the stars are Robin Williams and Billy Crystal. And we think you could run it. So I'm going oh my God. Robin Williams is my friggin' idol. Yeah. Phil Rosenthal is telling me, you're funny. I want to work with you. And another Simpsons writer is backing this up.
Wow.
So I'm sitting there going, I've finally arrived. So then they tell me, it's an animated show about chimpanzees in a retirement home. And I'm going, okay. And they say,
love it.
There's a pilot. And I'm like, cool. I'd love to read it. And then they say, and we actually recorded Robin and Billy. And it's like, okay, well, that's good. And he's like, they didn't really do the script. They kind of just sat down for 2 hours as these characters. And so I start doing this thing where you go, I'm nobody, right? Oh, no. I have nothing. Phil's amazing. Rob's amazing. Billy Crystal's amazing. Robin Williams is amazing. But I'm already backpedaling and going, okay, how do I get out of working with Phil Rosenthal, Robin Williams, and Billy Crystal? Because I don't want anything to do with this idea. And it just shows you talk about 2% on either end, but you can have all the brilliance in the world sometimes come together. And of course, we never saw this show, right?
Of course.
And sometimes for whatever reason, there's so much chance involved.
Goldie, the answer was it was right in front of you. You say, I'm so sorry. I'm working on the Jade Detective.
No, but literally, I'm working on Dads, which is getting panned. And I'm kind of going hey guys, I'm so busy on Dads right now, and I'm so invested in it that I'm not sure.
Oh, it's happened to
I can't
all
work
of us.
With Billy Crystal and Robin Williams, guys, because of Dads.
thank God for Dads. It happens to everybody. It happens to everybody. You go, this is a dream come true. I'm driving to this meeting. Or just drive now. It's and then it's like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
Get me out of this. Wow.
Well,
we've
talked about this on this podcast a few times, and Goldie was the smartest man in the room, dodged the Naked Gun bullet because, Seth was or is still involved as a producer in this new Naked Gun that's coming out with Liam Neeson. And, of course, he went right to Goldie to ask him to write it. And Goldie somehow, I thought he was crazy at the time, said, no, thank you. And then I saw that as my opportunity. I went to Seth hey, if Goldie doesn't want to do this, it's my dream to write Naked Gun. Cut to 2 years, two and a half drafts later.
Yeah.
And of every weekend filled of me staring at this other Family Guy writer on a Zoom, trying to come up with the best jokes in history, which is what Naked Gun basically is. I was fucking dead after that. It was the least I had ever been paid for a movie. It was the most time I'd ever spent doing something, and it was very poorly received. And I was just afterwards. I was like,
podcast?
What the fuck?
Did this happen?
Was it during the podcast?
Yeah. Did this happen?
It predated it a little bit. I want to.
Okay.
I want to point out a few things, because first of all, it was during COVID, like at the beginning, and I just didn't want to, you know, my kids were home, so it was like, I can't be just doing this. But I also remember that I had pitched what I thought was a hilarious thing pretty early on, which was I wanted to do a scene where, you know, Liam Neeson, Frank Drebin gets called in and he's told, like, you know, I'm pulling you off this. You're too close to the case. You know, it's like there's been some Murray's like, you're too close to the case. And then he says, well, what if I could get further away from the case? Like, what if I could make myself not care at all? And he's like, well, then, of course, you can stay on the case if you don't care. So, and he's like, OK, I don't care what happens. I don't care who the murderer was. And the victim meant nothing to me. He's like, great, you're still on the case. And so I pitched that. And then it went, when that got kind of like rejected, I was like, this is not going to work for me. Because that's like,
right.
I've been wanting to do that scene my whole career.
You made it. It's a Family Guy joke now. You did it.
Oh, I don't know. I wasn't even aware of that. But, you know, so I also had pitched a few things that were just looked on as not good. And then I was like, this is not going to work because those were, I thought,
you felt
good
they were
things.
Good.
And then it was like, I don't know. COVID was happening. I was depressed. And it was like, I can't do this.
Well, let's get to the raison d'etre of this show.
Yeah.
Which you guys violate sometimes, and I'm going to give you shit about it.
Please.
It's a show for writers who hate writing, okay? And let's never forget that, because sometimes you do forget it.
Yes.
And it makes me insane. Mm-hmm. And the only two that I have never listened to.
Oh, yeah, this is funny.
Well, I stopped listening. Well, first of all, I didn't listen to the one you were spoiling movies, and I hadn't seen the movies yet, so I didn't listen to that.
Yes.
The other one was, is this – sometimes when you go, is this something – fuck you guys with this something.
I don't care. Fun.
Don't make it. No, nothing's anything. Don't do it.
Nothing is anything.
Nothing is anything.
Keep
and the other
quote.
Thing that you
Keep
did.
That quote.
And then and one time you guys had the unmitigated, I usually like my gall mitigated, but this was unmitigated gall to write something. And everyone loved it. Fuck everybody.
No. Louis Schneider.
No. You did. We did not love it. Yemen, Copenhagen, and me. And we hated it.
Yes.
Don't do it anymore.
Wait. What did you say? This, everything is nothing. Nothing is anything.
Nothing is anything.
Okay.
Nothing
wait. Let's pause for a second. Keep this clean. Lou, give us a nothing is anything angry clean.
Nothing is anything.
There we go. Let's keep that and use that as one of our ongoing quotes. I love that. All right, we'll lose.
No,
so,
you guys, seriously, don't do that anymore. Don't write. Don't write on the show.
Yeah.
It's not about that. Let's remember what it's about. Because when someone presents you with an opportunity to write, your first, if you're any good at this, your first, and I'm going to include myself here because I was at one time okay. If someone submits an idea to you or something, your first response should be just what Goldie does with his hands. No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. It's like you're haggling for a price somewhere. Like when they tell you the price.
I'm not going to deny it. When you get going, and there are times you spring from the bed and rush to your quill and you start writing, but usually, no.
Yeah. I've never honestly had a moment where I felt I was in the zone at all.
Wow.
In any kind of zone. Like every word.
It's
has been agonizing.
Well,
for real.
You're
for
not
real.
In
like,
the zone.
Never
you're
once.
Not in the zone is in the zone.
What?
By
yeah.
the way.
Your specificity and your analogous specificity is unparalleled. I've never heard anyone nail
know.
The
yeah,
thing
it's on
like
the
you
spot.
Did today. Like you did today.
Well,
Danny
it has
Smith.
To be paralleled if he's making analogies.
That's true. But Danny Smith as the campaign worker who's lost an election. It's like, holy shit.
You can totally picture
and it's,
it, too.
And it's exactly right, too. I can
know,
see him in my mind.
On my best day, I only come up with a loosened tie. I don't have anything else. It's tremendous.
That's why I'm the ninth best person on Family Guy.
Yeah. Oh, come on, Goldie. You're seventh or eighth these days. Whatever. I won't get into that fourth best thing that'll make us both laugh and no one will know what we're talking about. But Lou, you're always such a delight, and we love having you here. We love that you're a return guest now. You're like sort of, you know, becoming the Richard Lewis of our podcast. Rest in peace. But I read something. I was reading, you know, your vast resume. And of course, Goldie and I talk on the show many times about, our stand-up careers, whatever they were. One of your earliest credits is 1992's HBO stand-up special. So I'm wondering if you can do for us, can you give us your closing?
I think it was something like, which is a terrible hack way to do it. I think it was about the fact, and this sort of still applies in some ways. My wife and I had been at a wedding, and it's a callback to a little bit. My wife and I had been at a wedding, and I was talking to the father of the bride, and we were looking at the place settings. And this guy's like this burly sort of like, you know, tough guy from Philadelphia. And he says, I'm no queer. I'm no homo. But that China, that's nice. And I'm like, is that where we've evolved to as a society? That like, you can like something that's attractive or pretty, but make sure you issue the disclaimer
right.
that you're no queer or you're no homo. And then I say, this is it. And then you guys are so hung up on that even when we're saying hello or goodbye to someone, we will hug them, but we won't just hug them. We'll pat them as we hug them, which is basically saying, yeah, I'm hugging you, but I'm hitting you. and that was the end. I think that's what I closed.
Good. Lou Schneider, ladies and gentlemen. Up and comer. Welcome to the 90s. Welcome to Lou Schneider.
Are you going to ever go back and try again?
I'm constantly writing, because I think, you know, like everybody, like all bad musicians, like, oh yeah, I was great in Pink Floyd, but my solo experimental stuff is really where it's at.
But you still have the persona, like you, like the Lou Schneider character could be on a show or a stand up. I mean,
I would like to do stand up again. And my wife is saying, we're going to produce the show. Like I do sometimes.
Yeah. She wants out of the house every night. Yeah, of course.
No, that's the problem. I won't. The night club is a problem.
So it'd be
club.
A day
it's
show.
Night. It would have to. Yeah. No, it's real. It's just like we went to Vegas as a group with Phil. You know, we go once in a while. And we're always trying to eat at steakhouses. And Phil gets incensed. It's like, what do you mean they don't have a 5:30? He gets so mad. I'm like, Phil, God. We're the only ones who can't digest meat after 8.
It's so funny because you told me, our Family Guy dinner, he said, well, it's at 8. Right, it was 8,
yeah.
Which I was livid about, and he's like, "The only choices were 8 or 5:30," and I was like, "You're insane! At 5:30,
5:30." Yeah. So the answer is, I would love to do stand up again, and I think as I have more to say now, you know, I have 3 kids who have all married poorly, so that's not true.
Only two of them have.
Only two of them are married, and neither one poorly. No, it's really hilarious, and so I have more to say now. So I think I might like try to do it. I do read essays from time to time. Like I've had people, you know, hire me for these evening of spoken word, and you can spritz a little stand up. You can cheat a little bit on those.
Yeah.
So
well, I do those.
Well, here's what we'll say to you now on this podcast is we would love to see that. So if you ever did like come back with a vengeance with your one man show, we will be there.
We filled Tom Gammel's living room.
Now that I know it's a living room, because I always say, let's just do it here, because I know where the bathroom is. Like, it's so much easier.
It's comfortable.
So maybe we'll do it. Like,
we will be there, and we will have you back on the podcast to talk about it, to promote it.
Yeah. Maybe one of you guys or both of you guys could do an opening 5.
Yeah, Alex.
Oh, my God.
Goldie.
Alex said he'd do it.
No way I'm following Goldie. By the way,
I know. Yes, you want me. You want me first, for sure.
Well, he did a great job at the Family Guy event, and he's back out there.
A couple questions about that. First of all, no one thought to put you guys in kind of an arc shape so you can see the other fellas.
That was a disaster. Well, Seth MacFarlane said he asked that before the show, and they said, we can't because of the fire marshal. Yeah.
What?
Which is bullshit.
That's bullshit.
Yeah,
that's the bullshit. Dumbest thing I've ever heard.
The other thing we were talking about was the Tom Gammel would do that in his living room is just so fantastic. Like, I just can't. And also, following him on any podcast, like, oh, don't follow him. Don't listen to that.
The worst thing adds a lot.
You guys are very, very kind, and you've been so generous with your time.
You got me. You got me. Well, I you know, as much as I want to dismiss you and wave you away, you again are going to be joining us for a portion of the show that we like to call Top 5.
Top 5.
Oh, we we sound great. Lou, why don't you lead us off again?
Okay. Yes. Okay.
Oh, and so the category today is top five best moments in American history.
Okay. Go ahead, Lou. I was told, sorry. Yeah. If it's top five best moments, then it's okay. Red Sox 04, Celtics 86.
Yes.
I was told it was top five events in U.S. history, not necessarily best. Like they could be.
It's whatever you want.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly. It's open to interpretation.
Okay. Yes.
These are noteworthy. I'm going to say five noteworthy. Okay. Wait, I have to interrupt myself for 1 second.
Yeah.
I want to go back for 1 second. You talked about, I'll reload this.
Sure.
I know what I wanted to say. I talked to, do you guys know Gary Greenberg?
Yes. I know he's
a great guy. And he was a stand-up in New York that used to work at Gladys's. The Emma Sun Gladys. So he said, not only was Gladys's, that was during a time when Silver Friedman had the rights to the improv name, and Bud Friedman could not open in New York as long as there was an improv in business, but they lost the building. So she would like put up a sign at an Italian restaurant that said, "Tonight, the improv." And it would be the improv for a week or two, and no publicity for the show. But anyway, he talked about Gladys's, and he I think he remembered you guys from Gladys's because he do you have any memory of him? Do you remember?
Goldie does. I don't remember.
I just remember he was around and he was at Stand Up New York and stuff, and then he had gone and done these adult pop up books.
Yes.
Cool.
That's right.
But
that's
I never really talked like to him. Above us, so far above us that like we wouldn't have encountered him, honestly.
Successful. Yeah, he's a really good friend of Attell's. You were there?
Yeah, no. But I mean, Attell would never have known who we were.
He didn't do Gladys's, Attell.
No, I know.
But also, there was this time at Gladys's before us that, like, there were, I think, more successful people who were doing it. And then we showed up after they kind of...
Everybody gets their start in my room, and they forget about me. It's like, probably because the room itself, nobody wants to remember that room.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, she never talked about how you stopped in her room.
Yeah, I know. What about all the stops?
So many people, more people actually stopped there.
Yeah.
Than started there.
Andrew Goffman, he stopped in my room.
We owe her a debt of gratitude.
We owe her a debt of anger. All right, let's get into top five.
Top five. Okay, so these to me are the top. These are top five noteworthy events.
Jesus Christ, just say these five things.
In American history. If you'd let me finish, Goldie, let me finish.
Well, maybe for your shock drop, maybe because you're one of those shock comics.
Lou is so angry.
Top five moments in American history.
1869, the ceremonial driving of the Golden Spike, which connected the two railroads that connected the coasts. And actually, the photo of it is the two trains coming face to face, which means they had to work that out.
I know, just for the photo op.
Yeah, I don't know. But that was a big deal because that's where we discovered that the western part of the United States was, in fact, nicer than the eastern part.
Yep.
Okay. September 2nd, 1945, General MacArthur accepts the Japanese surrender on the battleship, ending World War II.
Yeah, I mean, that was a good one.
World War II had ended in Europe, but that was a big war to get over.
Good one.
That's a biggie. January 1st, 1863, Lincoln signs the Emancipation Proclamation, announcing all persons held as slaves shall henceforth be set free, and everyone lived happily ever after.
Wow.
Wow, you took this seriously. You got some real dates here. Yeah, okay. I love this.
And I was a history major too. May 19th, 1919, the signing of the 19th Amendment, which of course Goldie knows, gave women the right to vote.
And that's why we had Hillary Clinton. Oh, wait.
And this is indisputable. There better be overlap. The Constitutional Convention of 1787, this was a miracle in Philadelphia. This was the birth of a modern state. Sure, it was mostly theoretical, but it laid out a grand plan for government and for administration of laws. Wow. And it was a... I'll go on. This is what my one-man show is about.
Well, that's a great and informed list, and you're going to see a stark contrast in mine here.
Me too.
Okay, so number five. Oh, just keeping on the theme. Number five, is James Brown performing Living in America in Rocky IV. I thought that was absolutely a peak America moment, a tentpole of the 1980s. I was never more patriotic than I was for those 3 minutes. And number four, today, now touching on something that is real, D-Day. D-Day, June 6, 1944, a moment, you know, like, because we look at war now as stupid and pointless, and a lot of them have been, Vietnam, the Gulf, Korea, mm-hmm. like, it's like, what were we doing? World War II had a point. Yep. And that day was probably the most important day in terms of defeating the Nazis. So D-Day gets a shout out. And now we're back to silliness. Number three, Tom Cruise pumping his fist on his motorcycle while the fighter jet is taking off behind him in Top Gun. I was right there in the theater, absolutely pumping my fist. And to contradict my last one, I was sitting there going, war, war, war. So I'm nothing if not contrast.
As your mom breathed a sigh of relief, she wasn't going to have to carry a 16-year-old body out of the theater.
You're right. Well, hey, Goose died later. So it was touch and go.
Spoiler alert.
It was touch and go. Number two, and I didn't like this guy. But I cannot deny this moment. W throwing an absolute strike from the mound right after 9/11 at Yankee Stadium. I thought that was that moment. I got goosebumps just thinking about it.
Oh, well, I can.
I got goosebumps just thinking about it.
Gotcha.
Thank you, Danny. Number one, sort of variation on a theme, Whitney Houston's national anthem at the Super Bowl, right when the first Gulf War started. And you'll never, ever hear a better national anthem performed than that one. So there's my list. Those are my five.
Lovely.
Goldie,
lovely.
You're up.
Okay. I mean, it's amazing, like, what didn't make this list, like, you know, the killing of Bin Laden or Lou Schneider integrating a pool. But number five. The greatest ripoff in history, the Louisiana Purchase.
Nice. Yes,
just
that
getting
made my
half
list.
The United States for, I think, $2 million from the French.
Yep. Red Auerbachian in its scheme.
Yes. Yes. Wow. Absolute steal.
Just working the French. Because they weren't here, like, they couldn't see it, so they didn't know. That should be there should be a comedy movie about that, about two guys trying to get the Louisiana Purchase going. Anyway.
Totally.
Number four, Jesse Owens at the 1936
Ooh,
Olympics.
Yeah. Awesome.
Just sticking it to Hitler.
Dominating.
Yes.
Yeah. Dominating.
Number three, I mean, if it happened, the moon landing.
I know.
Like, we definitely probably landed on the moon, or at least
maybe not.
Had a convincing film about it.
Yeah. I was going to say, couldn't both things work? If it happened, it's great. And if not, the hoax is great.
Great.
Yeah. Yes.
Either way.
Yep.
Yeah, either way.
Number two, my top two are personal. Number two is the Battle of Guadalcanal, which my father heroically was awarded a Silver Star and turned the tide against the Japanese and led to the MacArthur moment.
Yeah.
Wow.
And let's not forget, we got Guadalcanal.
War.
And number one, and I, as a resident of Lexington, Massachusetts, I'm legally obligated to say the shot heard around the world.
The shot heard around the world. In reality, maybe it was heard in Chelmsford.
What I'm shocked at is people who aren't from Massachusetts have not even heard of Lexington or the shot heard around the world. They just don't know that this
Concord gets more PR.
Yeah, they think it's Concord, which it isn't.
By the way, the kids in Carlisle don't know about it.
No. Those farmhand hicks, they don't know anything.
Well, that's a great list.
That's awesome.
JC, what do you got?
We do have overlap. I have overlap with one of you. But my number five, which is not overlap at all, December 21st, 1913, the first crossword puzzle was published in the New York, what was the name of this? The New York World.
Yes.
So for me, that's a very important moment because I am obsessed with crossword puzzles. I don't know if you noticed this. Number four, Dennis Rodman going to meet Kim Jong-un to, you know.
He saved the world.
He saved us.
He saved the world.
Yes. Number three is our overlap, Goldie. Moon landing. Did it happen? Not sure. But
it happened.
Still.
Come on.
I just love this the idea of it being a conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
One and two are serious. Number two, being able to vote, even though she didn't win, vote for a woman in my era, president. It was the most amazing feeling. That probably should have been one, but number one is...
Yeah, woke up my daughters so they'd be able to witness it.
Yeah.
That went well.
It breaks my heart. Every time you say it, Goldie, every time you say that, it breaks my heart.
It's like the Boston parents who woke up their kids when the Red Sox were one strike away in 86.
I
was on stage in Springfield, Missouri, and I never, ever did this. I raised a glass to toast the Red Sox. I said, the Red Sox are about to win the World Series. And then I left the stage in horror. It was terrible.
That's so painful.
And he could barely get out. And then he looked at the China and he said, I'm not gay, but
the headline, one of the headliners the week before me had died, literally died.
What's number one?
My number one, Obama being elected as president.
Great. That was great. That was
and
great.
Winning again, honestly.
Yes, totally.
Yeah, trounce. Double trounce.
Yes.
All right. That was very fun. Fun to talk about those moments. Fun to talk about them with Lou. JC, what do we have next week for top five?
Next week, top five movie psychopaths.
Oh. This is great.
Hey, can I?
I'm done with my list.
Can I pitch one?
I'm done.
Sure. Yeah.
Can I pitch one for later for you guys? Top five, Goldie, I think you're going to like this. Top five athletic moves. In other words, like, and it can be signature moves of people who, like, you know, pros, you know, quality athletes. Like top five moves. That's all.
Okay. I love that.
Right. We'll steal that for the next week.
Use it.
We could Saves use that email. For this one since he's our...
No.
Okay, cool. Beautiful.
All right, that'll be great next week. And next week, are we talking to Travis Bowe next week?
We are.
Oh, that's exciting. We're talking to a Family Guy writer, Travis Bowe, next week. Lot to talk about with him. We'll talk about Vegas again, I'm sure, from his point of view.
Yeah.
But I want to thank Lou Schneider
for being here
again. He's so fun and funny and so great to talk to. I want to thank you two for being awesome. I want to thank all of you out there in Yemen and Denmark for listening. And we will talk to you again next week.
Yeah. Yeah, let's do that.
That was fun.
And it stops right now.
How many U's are in,
Schneider Day, Schneider Day, do things in a Schneider way.
Moni.
Nothing is anything.